Welcome to Mind Mastery and Manifestation, the number one podcast helping you rewire your mind to erase fear, unlock your greatest potential, and get the extraordinary relationships, businesses, and lives you've always wanted. We're your hosts, Dan Mendelow
and Sophie Kessler.
Welcome back to Mind Mastery and Manifestation. And today I've got a really exciting interview. Exciting as hell for me because of a number of reasons. Well, I'll just jump in. So a while back, I got wind of a new show called Dear White People and, you know, had to check it out and immediately fell in love with it and thought that, you know, here's a refreshingly aware show with topics that hit everyone, no matter who you are, right? White, black, gay, straight, lesbian, female, male, whatever it is, but does it in a way that I hadn't seen before. And I was raving about it to all my friends. Like, you need to watch this show. You have to watch this show. If you're not watching the show, you are fucking up. And in my mind, you know, thinking like, who came up with this freaking thing? Like, how does this come about? Why isn't this everywhere, right? Why isn't this like a bigger trend? And then a few weeks later, the creator, writer, director, producer called me up and then, you know, offered me the incredible opportunity and the honor of coaching him through creating season three. So Justin Simeon is just this incredible human being, one of my, you know, all-time favorite clients, and you're going to fall in love with him as well. And just a little bit more about him in case you're not familiar with him. So here, you know, he premiered his, you know, the feature film, Dear White People, at Sundance, which was called Timely and Important by critics and audiences, and won him awards, and won him the Special Jury Award for Breakthrough Talent, was picked up by Lionsgate and Roadside Attractions. And then he was awarded the Best Film Screenplay, nominated for Best First Feature at the Independent Spirit Awards. Got nominations for the Bingham Ray Breakthrough Director Award. This bio is bananas. It's just award after award after award after award. But we're not going to talk about the show here. What I want you really to pay attention to is who Justin is and his story. Because what's really important for you to know about him is that he has overcome an enormous challenge in his life, and many challenges, and we're going to talk about them. But Justin is a gay black male creating media in a Hollywood that is predominantly white and straight. And that is, you know, it's becoming a more accepted and more open-minded kind of thing, but that's still huge. I mean, think about how much just, you know, black individuals or homosexual individuals have to struggle even now to do whatever they want to do in life, right? Like, we still have things like homophobia and racism in this country, things that should have been extinct long ago. And Justin has overcome so much to get to where he is now. And it really is an honor to bring his story to you and to get a peek inside of his mind and his heart that allowed him to do so much. And it's just my honor to welcome you, Justin, to the show.
Thank you, Dan. That was so sweet, man. I appreciate all that.
Of course, of course. So how did this journey start? Let's start at the beginning.
Which journey?
So the whole idea of like, you wanted to become a director, right? Yeah. You wanted to make, knowing you, like you have these visions. You don't want to just create entertainment.
No, right? It started young. I think I was, the way I've remembered the story, and you know, memory is a little funky at that age, but around 9 or 8 or so, I was watching the X-Men cartoon, like every kid my age.
Oh, love that cartoon.
And when I wasn't watching X-Men, I was running around the house with one eye closed, playing with my action figures to the Jurassic Park soundtrack. And why one eye closed? Because you can control the depth of field. with one eye, you know, like in a movie. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I was watching the X-Men and it just dawned on me that I think it must be somebody's job to decide whether to show a close-up of someone's face or, you know, a landscape, or I didn't have words for this stuff, but I just knew that it was someone's job to choose what the audience saw when they saw it. And I wanted that job. And I thought it might be called directing. I mean, this is how young and naive I was about the whole thing. And there was no, like, there was no tradition of it in my family, but I was always obsessed, is the word, with glowing images on screens, being projected, always obsessed with it and always trying to figure out how to tell a story visually. And I didn't know that there was a job for that. I didn't know that that was a thing, but it was always what I always, like weirdly always what I wanted to do. It was there already. And, you know, I had a mom who didn't get it really, but kind of stayed out of the way. And I got into a performing arts high school in Houston, Texas. And the thing about HSPBA, which is what it's called, you know, I thought, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm doing. There's no filmmakers in my family. There's no artistic tradition. And so I applied for the theater program because in my mind, theater and film are similar. And they are, but, you know, worlds apart as well. But that's where I became an artist, I think. That's when I was introduced to the idea that art is communication. And anything that is communication is intentional on some level. You know, we were really taught to analyze everything in a movie, and movies too. I mean, we would watch movies and stop them every 5 minutes. We would go see plays that the University of Houston was putting on and analyze them. And we were really taught there to treat everything in a film or a story as a choice. If something is making you uncomfortable, if you don't like something, well, instead of just rejecting it, go, why is this making me uncomfortable? What choices are being made in this piece? And why were those choices made? And it made me understand art on a deeper level, which made me understand the kind of artist I wanted to be. I was able to suddenly watch Kubrick, which I was not able to do before this training, you know. And I was able to appreciate all kinds of artists. I was introduced to Bertolt Brecht, which is a playwright who really popularized this idea of a play admitting that it's a play to the audience constantly. So it shows up in Dear White People, whether it's the narrator talking directly to the audience or the moments when the characters will just suddenly turn to camera, you know, this sort of like telling the audience over and over again that you're watching something and giving them that distance so they can think about it as well. All of that stuff came into my being in high school. And that's really where I realized, you know, I wanted to make work that had a purpose and that functioned in the world in a positive way.
There are a couple of things here that I really want to highlight because they are more than just things for directors. I love the fact that you're saying like you were obsessed with it. And it's something that I see with the most successful individuals in any industry at all, right? That obsession, right? Like I'm absolutely obsessed with psychology and transformation, finding out why people do what they do and help them get to what they want to do, which kind of leads into your next point, which is so beautiful, which is, yeah, man, our first instinct when we feel something painful or uncomfortable or weird is to reject it, is to run away from it. But that disables us from being able to understand ourselves even more or understand each other even more. That's one of the biggest problems I think that we have right now in the political system as well, is that people just hear something that they don't quite get or hear something that they don't agree with and they just shut it down. They're not willing to explore it within themselves or other people. And so that's where it stays, just on the surface. And I love that we were talking about this a little bit before hitting record as well. Your show makes me question myself as well, right? Like myself and my relationships with other people and that exploration of what makes us uncomfortable, it's beautiful. It's almost like a spiritual kind of thing. Like we understand, okay, well, who are we? Why are we where they are? We are. Do we have to continue being the way we are?
Right.
And is our, I don't want to say like, my first thought was like our salvation It sounds a little bit grandiose, but it's actually close to true.
It's how you grow, though. It's always itchy. It's always uncomfortable. I mean, 2001 A Space Odyssey is my favorite film of all time, but I saw it 7 times before I could see it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hated it. I hated it because it was not what I thought a movie was, you know? And every time it came on TCM or whatever, I would watch it because I knew I loved film. And I, you know, I felt like I was supposed to like this movie, and I was expecting Star Wars or something because it was Space Odyssey, and it was monkeys and like weird dancing. and it took me a while to get that film. And when I did get it, this is college now. I was in a philosophy class, and he just screamed it at the end of the class without any sort of conversation. And I realized that the movie was communicating without dialogue. And non-verbally, these incredibly specific and profound ideas. And it was doing it all visually. It was actually it really is taking you through all of the sort of philosophical thoughts that we've ever had about our existence as people and as, you know, our place in the universe. It goes through all the history of philosophical thought about that, but purely through the visuals. And it was like a religious experience. It was like an explosion in my brain. And thank God Stanley Kubrick didn't give a fuck about people not understanding the movie the first time they saw it. Because now there's this movie in my life that's like a religious experience every time I watch it. And the bravery of that, you know, and the necessity of that. And it's also entertaining now that I get it. But it's, you know, it was uncomfortable too. And appreciate that and understand that that was art's function in a lot of ways. And even if the point of a piece is just to entertain, at least do it on purpose, you know? That's what I got. That's what I got from sort of that artistic awakening, is do everything with intention.
Yeah, that's a huge theme in my world too, and also in my coaching as well, is that constant push to be intentional with everything you do.
You told me something I've been using a lot since our coaching session, which is pay attention to the things that give you energy and the things that take away energy. And even though you like things, or especially this part, even though you're good at things, if they are taking away energy, pay attention to that. And directing is one of those things that always gives me energy. I mean, and especially if you were there... It's exhausting to make a television show. I mean, it's brutal. It is really, really brutal in the best of circumstances. And you don't have time to sleep. You show up sometimes on set pretty haggard. And the minute I am in front of an actor, though, figuring out a scene, or with my DP and figuring out how we're going to shoot the scene, I'm alive again. I'm alive. Like, I'm back and I feel more energetic than ever. I started feeling that way after doing my podcast. It's become like a mantra of paying attention to what it is that lights me up.
Yeah. You know?
And that really was the beginning of a lot of changes for me emotionally. And yeah, a lot of that started with PVA, I have to say. Like, thank God for an arts education. It's devastating to me that there are kids who don't get one, because that's where I found myself.
Yeah. And so let's keep on talking about that. So, you know, you're exploring yourself, exploring directing. How did you actually break into the business, and what were the challenges there?
Oh my God. So, well, it was a long, steady stream of efforts, short films, web series, that whole thing. But eventually, after going to film school, and I emerged with a short film that didn't really do anything for me in terms of my professional career. And I ended up working at Focus Features as a publicity intern. I'm sorry, as a publicity assistant. I started as an intern. And I thought I'd be there maybe for 6 months or something, you know, just to kick my feet wet and be in a cute Hollywood studio. And then I'll be a big time director at 22. Did not happen that way. So I had an 8-year career in publicity, basically, learning how to sell art movies, basically, to the public. I mean, Focus Features was Brokeback Mountain, was the big film when I started there. And I did that during the day, and at night I would go home and I would write, and I would have writers groups on the weekends, and just was always working on my craft. And Dear White People as a script emerged at one point in time in that process. And I just had done a few web series, and I had done some shorts, and I was like, and nothing was working. Like, nothing was earning me the money, nothing that I thought would make me money was making me money to do what I love. I still had to do my day job. And I just had this moment where I was like, I don't want to make shorts. I don't want to do things for money. I want to make a feature film. And I know which one I've wanted to make since college, Dear White People. It was called 2% at the time, referring to the 2% black people amongst, you know, a mostly white attended college. But like, it just clicked in me. It was like, if it takes me 40 years to make this feature film, like that 41st year will be so worth it compared to like not making it or not trying. And I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, the craft I had, but the actual process of making a film, I had no freaking clue. So it was really just kind of, I was also very depressed at the time. I didn't realize I had depression, but I did. And I just had to walk through it step by step. And one of those steps ended up being, we had a table read one night that went really well. And it was me and some producing partners I had brought on and people who I had, you know, I wrote the feature in writers groups. And so people who had heard the script, everyone came in. I had actor friends read the parts. And we had a conversation after the end of that reading that felt like the kind of conversation I wanted people to have in the lobby of this film. And it felt like we were there, and now we had to figure out how to make it. And so I took my tax return, and I made a trailer for the movie. But I made it so good and so tight that you wouldn't be able to tell that it was just like a fake trailer or like a fundraising trailer. I wanted it to feel like, oh, this movie is coming out like in a month. And then at the end of it, instead of coming soon, you get give me money. And that raised me, you know, about $46,000. I needed five. We just wanted $5,000 to incorporate so we could ask for money. We got $46,000. We were able to more than incorporate. We were able to start casting the whole thing. And it still took a year, mind you, to get the thing financed and in production. But that was the starting point, really, was that concept trailer hitting YouTube and going viral. And I ended up on CNN talking about it. And that's when things started to kind of move. That's when things got really difficult too, because I quit my job at the time. I needed to energetically to step out on faith. And faith was not there for a minute.
Oh, man.
I got really broke. And, you know, I had no job. And the movie, everything we thought was going to happen to the movie collapsed. You know, everyone we thought was going to make it. We were at Paramount for a while. We were talking to some cats at Sony, like, but we were never at Paramount. We were at Sony for a little bit. Nothing came to fruition. You know, I got into no festivals with the script. Like literally there were competitions, like fundraising competitions, like Tribeca had a thing where you could go and meet with potential fundraisers. We didn't get into it, but we won a competition because of the popularity of the trailer. And I got in there anyway. It was like that the whole time. It was just sort of like obstacle, obstacle, obstacle. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And, you know, but that's how my particular birth into this industry happened.
And so how did you deal with that? I mean, struggling with depression is something that I know intimately. And just that challenge alone is enough to completely derail a life. But then money troubles and, you know, the stress of trying to make this project happen. How did you keep sane? What did you do?
I don't know that I did keep sane, to be honest, but I had really good friends, and Lena Waithe in particular. I mean, we were both really, really freaking broke. And, you know, I remember trading tips on how to get the unemployment line. Because, you know, when you're on unemployment, it's incredibly inconvenient. It's very difficult to prove and all. They make it hard, you know. And so we had a friend that taught us she had memorized the Korean line for unemployment so that you could just press the buttons and get through to somebody, because not as many people were calling the Korean line. When you called the regular line, like, it was always busy. Stuff like that. We were always talking. So we just had this system where we would call each other and ask each other, are you on watch, which is short for suicide watch. But, you know, we were not there, but that's the language we use, colorful people. And, you know, hey, sis, you on watch? Hey, brother, you on watch? And we would just meet up and find cheap food or go for a walk or, I mean, just be in despair together and cheer each other up. And that's about the time I found Buddhism. A friend of mine named Cameron Washington, who Lena introduced me to, was having, like, they were doing chanting. And it's Nichiren Buddhism, which is chanting. It's Nami Horendikyo. It's what Tina Turner does in the What's Love Got to Do with the movie. But, yeah, I had already been meditating for 2 years. And again, I didn't know that I was depressed. I didn't know that that's what, I just thought I was human and this is what everyone felt all the time. But I had been meditating through my depression for years. And it was a beautiful practice and lots of amazing things opened up and happened for me. But depression always stayed. The lack of stuff happening in my career was very there. And I started chanting and the career began to move right away. The manifestation part of me really came alive when I started to chant. And eventually I got the movie made. We got into Sundance. I was chanting for a boyfriend. I got a boyfriend. I was chanting to pay my rent. And everything was checked off the list, but I would wake. I couldn't get out of bed. It was crushing to hear the words, "Aren't you so excited?" And to have to, "Yes, I am. I made a movie and it's out. Yay." You know, play that whole thing. But knowing inside, I felt nothing. I felt nothing. Nothing. I staved off disaster is how I felt when I accomplished things. I didn't feel joy or celebratory. I was just like, "Oh, thank God, I'm not dead." That's how I felt. And it was like a full year of my poster sitting in my room, in my apartment, before I felt any pride about what I had accomplished and what had took me so long and was so hard to accomplish. And that's when I began to chant about my feelings. That's when I knew something was wrong. And the focus of my Buddhism became much more about me on an internal level and what has happened and why I'm put together this way. And yeah, I mean, that was a lot of it. Therapy was a lot of it. You know, at a certain point, I started taking medication for my depression. It was about my body was sort of needing me to take something very seriously that I was not able to see before, you know, the success in quotation marks. You know, to me, success is doing what I love in a way that I can still love it. Doing what I love without hating it. That's success to me. And I was, by that metric, I was not successful at all when I made the first film. You know, that's where I was for a long time, for several years.
That's a brutal place, man. And I see so many people getting into it. And, you know, for a little while, I was there too, where we can tell ourselves when we're finally doing what we want to do, or we have our businesses, our projects, like, yeah, I'm finally doing this. And, you know, we can lie, logically lie. Yeah, I have all these things. Then, yeah, I'm happy. Or we tell ourselves, yeah, I'm happy, or I'm good, or whatever we need to do in order to get through the day.
Yeah.
But then when we dig in, we feel that emptiness or that resentment or that resistance. And I see that with so many people where they're finally doing the thing that they always wanted to do. They created this dream and then become slaves to it because the challenges and everything, they don't focus on themselves. And they think, well, if I'm going to be successful, you know, I got to focus only on the movie, right? Or only on the business or only on the whatever it is. And they ignore themselves and they get to a place where finally they have everything they thought they wanted and they're fucking miserable.
Yeah. What I'm realizing it is for me and what I think it is for a lot of people, especially gifted people who are different from an early age. And you can add things on top of it, black, gay, whatever, but different. You're different. And you know it, think differently than the people around you. And that could be for a variety of reasons. But I learned very early. I learned very early to curate my personality to suit the people around me. Because if they didn't love me and if they didn't accept me, then I was dead. I was dead in the water. That's how you feel as a kid. You know, when your parents don't get you, it doesn't feel like your parents don't get you. It feels like you're going to be left for dead. I mean, that's our evolutionary instinct is to want to be loved unconditionally by our parents. And when we know secretly there are conditions that fucks us up and we start to pretend. And the version of me that was walking through the world was a version of me. I didn't know, of course, this is all unconscious. You start doing it at one and two. So by the time you get to be 30, whatever, I don't know, I'm doing it. But, you know, I'm walking through the world with only parts of myself. And, you know, oh, you want the part of me that's really excited all the time. So let me conjure that up for you. Hey, oh, you want the part of me that's really thoughtful. Let me conjure that up for you. Yes. You know, that was me all the time. And you can't help, even though the corset is invisible, there's a pressure that you can't quite even explain. And I think that my depression had a lot to do with that, of just, even though I was out and even though I'm obviously Black and I'm making a show called Dear White People, even then, there was this constant holding in my gut. But spiritually speaking, or and mentally speaking, there was a constant curation process. There was no space for Justin to just be Justin, because curating Justin is how Justin got out of Houston, Texas, out of spaces where he wasn't understood. That's how I got the movie made. That's how I survived in Hollywood for 8 years. There was a construction, a personality construction that was very necessary, and it was the only tool I had when I first started. But now that I can breathe a little bit and see that I've succeeded at something a little bit, that's around the time I began to go, you know, this got me so far and that's great, but if I can't enjoy it, then I'm not there yet. I haven't fully figured myself out and I haven't really fully figured out life yet. And I just have never been able to tolerate uncertainty that well when it comes to my spirit. I have what they, you know, my Buddhist friends say, I have a seeking spirit. I'm always trying to figure out like how to be better and like what's really happening with me spiritually, mentally, psychologically, philosophically, artistically. Like I always want to know what's happening with myself. And thank God for that, because, you know, that got me through some tough times, you know. And when I went to see you, I was making season 3 of my show and I was making my sophomore feature film. And that was crazy to do those two things at the same time. It was crazy. But I also felt like I had to do it. I just felt like I was in a place in my career. I had to make my second feature. I don't know how else to even explain it. It was a soul thing. I just knew it had to be now. And I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to move through that. And really, like, my time with you was the beginning of a really profound shift in me. I'm not on pills anymore, by the way. I'm not on my pills anymore. Yeah.
Yes.
Good way. Not in I went off and I'm crazy. But like, it really began a profound shift in me, the work with you. I ended up seeing a new therapist a few months after we completed our work together. And, you know, one of the things that you do that I loved is you would have me go back to the original feeling, you know, or as close to it as I could. And you're very specific about the age range about that. And what that began to open up for me is, well, one, certain things would just fall away. Certain anxieties would fall away. But some would still be there. But because I knew that we had worked in this area, well, then that meant that maybe this anxiety was in a, it was like a light down in a well that had just been without light for so long. And it literally, it was like right after we finished and right after the thing, I started reading Drama of the Gifted Child again, which I had read already. Have you read that?
Or yeah, it's a great book.
And her story is crazy, by the way. We can talk about that later. But her methods are real because she inadvertently did that to her child. It came out later that she was very mentally abusive to her child. But the thing that she highlighted is that therapists have a blind spot in the areas where they were traumatized. And that was true for her. But the other point she was making is that so much of it comes down to shame, childhood shame. And then I walk into my new therapist's office and he takes one look at me and he goes, "You're not in your body as much as you think you are. There's a lot of shame in there you're avoiding." And I'm like, "What do you mean? I just saw Dan. My third season, I'm perfect. You know, I'm great." And, there's always more work, I think.
Yeah.
But like, but yeah, I mean, it's been, for me, it's been about figuring out how to be myself all the time. What that even means, what that even feels like is new. It's brand new for me. But life has so much more joy in it when I can bring all of myself to all of the things that I do, you know, and start with me. I think that was the other reason why I felt so stuck, is that it was always starting from the outside. You know, what does success look like to someone else? I didn't even know things like if you asked me, like, how long did I want my show to run for? I couldn't answer that question because it was all like, well, what do you think? You know, it was like, what's good? You know, what's successful? Everything was outside based. And it was always about trying to negotiate between what I really wanted to do and what I felt like the outside forces were making me do. And now it's more like, well, what do I want to do? End of story, period. What do I want to do? That's where it starts. And that was a big, freaking hard left turn kind of shift. But it was so needed and so necessary. And I don't know where I would be without having made it.
Man, I had that very same kind of exploration last year. Because I was hustling my ass off.
Yeah.
And I was a coach. Like, that was my identity. And it burned me out.
Yeah.
I was like floored on the couch every other week watching Netflix forever. Right. Because I couldn't do anything. Like, I did not have the will nor the ability to get up because that identity was so restricting that in order to feel good about myself, I had to be a coach all the time. I had to work all the time. If that's who I was and that's where my pride or feel goods came from, then that's all there was. But it's all just work.
Yeah.
Constant work. And we're so much more than that. And then it's also like, well, am I a coach? Do I look and feel and talk because that's what I think a coach should be? That's what I think you want me to be as a coach. And it was really interesting where I had a lot of people then also telling me like, you know, in your marketing pics, like you don't look like you. I'm like, the fuck does that mean? I don't look like me. Who do I look like?
Like,
what do you mean? Like I look like Michael Jackson? Like who am I? Don't look like you. And no one could really fully explain it to me in a way that clicked until I got fed up with feeling like shit and fell into that same sort of thing of exploring, okay, well, who am I? What is this thing that I've created for other people, but not me? And why is it that this thing does not have me in it? How can I be not me? That was a concept that I could not wrap my head around. I'm still Dan, right? I look in the mirror, I still see me. How can't I be me?
Yeah.
And then I realized it was really that same thing where I had created, and it came from when I was still depressed because I was still coaching. I started coaching when I was depressed and I did the same thing. I created an identity that felt safe, that felt acceptable, that didn't ruffle any feathers, that almost like an ideal. But I'm not the ideal guy, you know, like that's not me. I'm not uber professional. I curse all the time. I'm judgy and cynical. And I love that because it's my sense of humor and I fuck with people and I tease people and that's my way of communicating. And I didn't have any of that.
Right.
And it was like my sense of humor was suppressed. And when I hung out with friends, I was twacked out because I'm a coach. Coaches don't have friends. Coaches don't go have drinks. Like, coaches work. And I had this big dilemma where it's like these two different sides of me, like the real me and then this coach me, didn't get along. They conflicted.
Yeah.
And what happened because of that conflict was all of me lost.
I get that, man. You know, that's what the show is really about, really at its heart and soul. It's about identity itself. Because we live in a society that without an identity, you're dead. You're invisible.
Yeah.
Especially if, I mean, anybody, white men, straight, it doesn't matter. But especially if you're other things other than straight and white.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, man, if you don't have an identity in the world, you're not in the world. But yourself, it's all of these things. I mean, who you really are, it's ineffable. It's hard to even put it into words. You're a bundle of thoughts. And then you're all this other stuff too that can't even be communicated in words. And you're like, you're conflicting emotions and you're the past and you are dream. You're all of these things, but you have to sort of put that into a little, like a hockey puck in order to survive in the world. And for Black people, for women, it could kill you if you don't do that. It could kill you if you don't play the game, literally. And so, you know, and this is not about making about the show, but it's just like Sam is a person who, when we first meet her, it's real, it's genuine. Her activism is real, but it becomes a prison. Her pedestal becomes a prison for her because she can't always be that damn Black all the time for everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, she's other things too. She's literally two races and a filmmaker and all of these things. And yet, you know, she's suffering and excelling from putting herself into the box of Sam. And then you have a character like Lionel, who is like really like afraid to claim being gay. He's really afraid to fully lean into his gay identity because he knows that he's all of these other things. But because he's afraid to lean into that identity, he's invisible. And he doesn't have friends, and he can't connect, and he can't get on in society. And it's that tension between those two things that, to me, like, mastering that tension is, I think, how you master life in a colonially based society where there is a hierarchy. And, you know, people always accuse Black folks of identity politics, but we didn't invent identity politics. We were given an identity, and that identity has proven to be very fatal to us. And so politics is the only way to get out of that, you know? But that really is that mastering that art between your identity and yourself is really what the whole show is about. The reason the show is so freaking talky and we go into so many topics is because the underpinning of the show is actually very simple. Everyone is either running away from or running towards an identity in every scene. That's what the whole thing's about. Yeah. And that's why it's about that, because it's such a trap. It's so necessary to call yourself a coach and to put that out there and to brand yourself. And it's so necessary, but then it can become a trap so quick too.
Yeah. And what is also really awesome in the show and in real life, you know, I've felt it. And, you know, from your story, it seems that you have as well, is that we go through that journey. You know, we create something, we realize it's not making us happy, we destroy it, we go through that panic, okay, of who am I? Will it be accepted? Whatever. And I feel like at some point, we just kind of snap. Mm-hmm. From the people that I've spoken to who have had this kind of challenge, it hasn't been like a graceful thing. It's almost like I'm fucking sick of playing this game.
It's not graceful.
I can't do it anymore. I don't care if yeah. I'm rejected. Fuck this. I'm so tired of this goddamn charade.
Yeah.
That I am done. I'm gonna be fucking me. That's it. Unapologetically me. I'm gonna talk like me, look like me, be like me. If you don't like it, go fuck yourself. And you know what's really incredible is that a lot of times, and most of the times that I've seen, that's when things really start working.
That's when things start working. And when people don't like it or they don't whatever, there's even value there too. Mm-hmm. When you don't care, but you can hear it anyway, there's value there. I mean, what to me, what has been about since seeing you really is like every opportunity to release shame, I want to take it. And that it always is extremely uncomfortable. I was watching, I'm not going to say what, but I was watching a movie and was just like, oh my God, this is so terrible. And just on and on in my head, like, what the hell? Da, da, da. And I was right. Okay. But the fact that it was coming up for me as this arrogance, like, you know, what was that about? And in the movie, in this terrible movie I'm watching, I'm leaning into that and going like, why do I feel this need constantly in my brain to elevate myself in the face of this movie? What am I so afraid of that I can't just watch this terrible movie and laugh when it's funny and whatever and get out of the theater? Why am I like constantly having to tell myself how much better I am and how I would do it better? And I realized, oh, that's because, and literally a memory will come out, will emerge from that process. And it's usually something from a long time ago. And, you know, in this case, it was a rejection letter I received from some competition that everybody just universally felt like if you got accepted to this competition, you were going to make it. And I didn't get in for film. And it is a white majority competition. I got in for film with the NAACP Act. So the Black people were cool with my filmmaking. But I submitted to this bigger competition and I didn't even place, you know. And the shame of that and the feeling that, like, I didn't have that official stamp on me, even though I didn't remember it and even though it literally means nothing to me now, it meant something to me and I repressed that feeling and it was still with me in this movie theater. Wow. To the point where, like, I was having to talk constantly in my head about how much better I would make this shitty movie that I would never make. It's stuff like that's become my, when I feel like something is coming up for me, like arrogance in particular is a really good indicator for me, or just being uncomfortable, or if someone says something to me that really, really hurts my feelings, like in a way that is beyond what they actually said, that's when I know shame's afoot. And instead of running away from it, and instead of telling myself they ain't shit and telling myself fuck this movie and all this kind of stuff, leaning into it has become, like, I'm trying to make a practice of leaning into it and being a disciple to it, you know, because it's really healing. It's really healing, and it's really hard, but when you do it, you're just like, oh, you know, it's like a, something got removed, like a cyst got removed or something. So, yeah.
I love that, man. I wish we had so much more time. Sometimes I wish
we could
do like Joe Rogan style of just like 3 hours.
I know.
and maybe we will, because I keep on running into this point where I'm like, shit, you know, kind of promised a time, you know, when we'd be done. And like, so many more things we want to talk about.
Well,
so we might have to do this again.
We're still here. We can always do it again.
Yeah, this is just too fun, man.
Yeah, it is great, man. It's good to talk to you again, too.
Yeah, it's really good to see you and good to see that you're doing so well and off of meds.
Yeah, yeah.
That is so...
We can talk about that next time. That was a journey. I don't recommend anyone just going off their pills and jumping out a window. But yeah, I thought, you know, yeah, I had a course of therapy that was really healing the damage and started to wake up and go, what would it be like if I took a little bit less of this? And
yeah,
what happened if I took a little bit less of that? And then all of a sudden I'm not on anything and I feel fine. It's a journey though. I don't regret that getting on medication, and I would tell anybody to do it again if they need to, because this shit is really hard to figure out. Mm-hmm. It's just hard. And sometimes you need a crutch, you know, if while you keep fighting it and while you keep working on it, of course.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Sure. Well, Justin, man, it is so good to see you. Such an honor to have you on this podcast. And, dude, there's so much stuff. You know, if you're listening to this, do yourself a favor and listen to it again. I usually like to take little breaks and highlight like the gems, but there were so many in this that you had, Justin, that seriously, do yourself a favor. Just listen to this podcast again right now. Just loop it back to the beginning.
Yeah, your wife on mute, but put it on. So
no, watch the damn thing. Watch it.
Do both. You can do both.
Like, it's so good. It's just so good and refreshing. And, you know, I see a little bit of me in every single character. And I do feel that exploration of identity. And maybe that's one of the reasons why I really love it so much. It's because I can see, like, I get that, like every single character, even the characters that I would never really think in daily life that I'd have a lot in common with.
Right, right.
And I'm like, oh my God, like we're kind of all very much the same, you know, going through very similar struggles and investigations and explorations and challenges, and it's really beautiful to be able to see it, you know, to like literally see it. And so, yeah, brother, we definitely gonna have to do this again. It was way too much fun.
Great, man. Well, I'm still here. I'm around. I got other things coming down the pipeline to give us plenty of excuses to talk to each other.
Perfect. I'm going to use all of them. All right, friends, if you're still listening to this, and if you still enjoy, you know, listen to this thing, if you think that this helped you, or if you feel like you know someone who could really benefit from hearing Justin's story or anything in the podcast at all, please share this out, right? Leave us some reviews on iTunes. You can just screenshot and tag me in this. And yeah, thank you so much for spending this time with us, Justin, and the listeners.
When I get my podcast up and going again, I'll have you on too.
I love that. That would be so much fun.
Yeah. Let's just
All right, guys.
All right. Thank you, man. See you soon.
Tons of love.
Bye-bye.